Shh! Jeb shrugged as the forest rolled by beneath them. He wasn't flying so much as using telekinesis to pick himself and Jessica up like duffel bags and carry them along. But to the average person, it would look a lot like flying. Tomato, tomato. Jeb's telekinetic lift had ballooned, clocking in at about 2 tons, and his cruising speed was somewhere between 60 and 120 miles an hour if he really pushed himself. His limits were expanding rapidly to catch up with the growth of his mist core, and he still didn't feel like he'd caught up. Well, I have been pushing mist really damn hard. I should be able to do at least this much. They were going as fast as a car, but they didn't have the proper wind shielding for it, forcing Jeb to squint against the wind as they passed over the stealth raptors, giving the ambush predators the finger. Why on earth should he fight fair against those things? From this height, Jeb could see where Ron's army had cut a path through the forest, the hundreds of deadites stomping a relatively clean trail through the brush, aiming for the mountains. It didn't seem like the necromancer had spent much time in the forest, so there was a possibility there were still some pickings left. Definitely looks like Ron came through here, Jeb said, fishing through his pockets for his aerial bombs. His aerial bombs were set to trigger the moment the mistbound rocks touched the ground. They even had little homemade fins to make sure the right side of the rock hit the ground. Otherwise, the explosion might be directed underground. Taking the first one out of his pocket, Jeb couldn't help but think of his middle school egg drop project, designed to spin a rotor and ease the egg's fall. It almost worked. Jeb gave the rock an encouraging little smooch and dropped it into the forest. This was the most excitement the rock had seen in a million years, so it was on board too. The stone plummeted down into the forest, and all hell broke loose. There was a thunderous crash as the trees in the surrounding area, for a good 50 feet in every direction, were severed in half and toppled over. The behavior of the mist attached to the rock was that it would go up about 3 feet, up, determined by the finned side of the rock, then expand a razor-thin line of telekinetic force in every direction. If it was taller than 3 feet and standing on the ground, it was dead meat. The forest burst into activity, trees shaking and howls of pain and anger rising up. Looks like Ron didn't fully clear the place out. All right, let's do some bombing runs, Jeb said, pushing Jessica away from him until they were 100 feet apart, so the radius of their explosives just barely grinded up against each other. Oh, I think I need to get laid. Together, they flew over the forest of scary stealth dinosaurs, unloading their heavy bags full of rocks and turning it into the forest of bloody mulch. You have gained a level. 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 Congratulations. You have beaten the Phantom Raptor, Gresh, in a one-on-one duel. Whoops. Did I just accidentally a boss? Your mastery of stealth is beyond reproach. Sure it is, buddy. I'm so good at it I didn't even realize I killed him. Grisha's subtlety accolade granted. +3 body. +3 nerve. Ding! Your party has cleared the forest of gnashing teeth. Please take your rewards.
It looks like Ron must have killed the boss on the way through, Jessica said as he brought her closer. I guess we're just going to have to roam out further to find...
Jeb couldn't stop his eyes from sliding off of her face.
You killed the boss, didn't you? She asked, scowling.
I didn't even know it was there, Jeb protested. His mastery of stealth was beyond reproach.
I get the loot.
Jeb's inner haggler howled in outrage, but she had him dead to rights on that one. Better to take the loss now than let resentment build up. Fine. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 28. Body 16. Mist 56 plus 2. Nerf 21 plus 3. Abilities. Mystic Trigger. Finger Gun Clips. Ack, 10, check. Pip, 10, check. Kip, 10, check. Alpha Strike. Skull and Crossbones. Full Auto. Juggernaut, check. Mark of Cain, check. Cain Auto, 4. BP, check. HR, check. BD, check. OD, check. Cain Manual, 2. Just Getting Started. Check. Alt Blinks. Check. Shield.
4. Check. Armor. Head. Check. Torso. Check. Legs. Check. Upper arms. Check. Lower arms. Check. Projectile reflection. 50. Check. Safety phrases. Restraints. 3W. Check. Scarabs. Check. Plitzkin. Check. No homo. Check. Room full of Charlie Skull and Crossbones grenades go boom. Nut. Check. Rock. Check. Knife. Check. Authorize magical girl transformation. Skull and Crossbones. Aerial bomb. 10. Check. 1 day, 15 hours remaining. Oh, look, there's Ron, Jessica said, pointing out a pinprick in the far distance surrounded by a swarm of shambling pinpricks making their way up the side of the bald mountain. He could barely make it out. Was it body or nerve that boosted her eyesight? Maybe both? Body to make her eyes muy bueno and nerve to interpret the data? No, wait. I've seen a YouTube video on this. There's literally a limit on how much detail you can perceive based on the size of your eye and how much light wavelengths expand over distance, or something like that. So are her eyes magic now? Or just tippy-top of what a human can do? Or, like so many other things, is it a moot, nitpicky point? These were the thoughts that occupied Jeb's mind as they tracked down Ron's army of the dead. Jeb was relieved to see the vast majority of the man's shambling zombies were non-human as he came in for a touchdown at a reasonable distance from the necromancer. Ron must have seen him coming because he cleared a spot for Jeb to land. Standing right beside Ron's rough palanquin was a hulking skeletal brute in heavy armor, wielding a giant axe and overflowing with black energy. Ron's personal bodyguard. Formerly Redbeard. Flight? Ron asked, shaking his head. Oh, man, I'm jealous. It's not really flight. More like carrying myself, Jeb said with a shrug. Ron rolled his eyes. It's flight, he and Jess said at the same time, glancing at each other with a moment of startlement. So what's up, man? Ron asked, crossing his arms. Got my class. Thought I'd stop by and trade. I also wanted to hear what you know about the people to the northeast. That camp of 50 or so people? Ron scoffed. I got out of there. It was getting too political for me. They're not big fans of me reusing dead people, even though... He rapped his knuckles on the Death Knight's armor. High-level humans are definitely worth recycling. They just can't get over the idea of someone using their corpse. I mean, come on, they're already dead. What do they care? I'm not using their damn soul or anything. They're not... Jeb wiggled his fingers. Evil or anything, though? Nah. Well, they're going to try to raid the world tortoise tomorrow, Jeb said. A line of disposable pawns would save a lot of lives. Jeb glanced at the army surrounding them. If Ron signed on to the tortoise raid, Jeb might be interested in giving it a shot, since the man's army would make an excellent safety buffer. On the battlefield, the speed at which things could turn to absolute shit would spin your fucking head. But if they had Ron's undead to give them wiggle room, save stamina, it could give them time to realize they were screwed and sound a retreat if necessary. Nope, Ron said, waving his hand. I know how this works. If I join up, they're gonna burn through my army without so much as a thank you and leave me back at square one. I'm not exactly combat effective in one-on-one battle, you know? He said, pointing a thumb at himself. You could negotiate for them to give you monster corpses. How do I enforce it without my army? Ron asked, scowling, his demeanor becoming more agitated. All right, Jeb said, putting his hands up. What if I paid you in advance with the army of dead monsters you'll be expected to use? Well, that's a different story, Ron said, relaxing. You'd have to sweeten the pot a bit since I don't get to keep them. Raising the dead isn't free or easy. He tapped his fingers on his elbow. I want a fire lens from the Mountain of Fire, he said, pointing toward the distant volcano. And 3 stat potions, preferably body, but I can't be picky. How about 2 potions and a tool for self-defense? Jeb asked. You mentioned not being combat effective. What do you have in mind? Jeb fetched a sturdy stick from farther down the mountain, binding a shotgun blast of telekinetic blades to the tip of it with Mystic Trigger. Can I use one of your zombies as a demonstration?
Knock yourself out,
Ron said with a shrug, a nearly shredded dino zombie limping to the front of the pack. Here, Jeb said, holding the stick out. If you say the words, Turnip Factory, Buckshot will blast out this end. Ron's brows rose. His Death Knight stepped forward and took the stick out of Jeb's hands, the necromancer seemingly unwilling to handle the object himself.
Pardon my caution, Ron said.
Understandable, Jeb said as the Death Knight raised the stick and pointed it at the mostly destroyed zombie.
Turnip Factory!
The zombie dino exploded into chunks.
You can just make those whenever you want?
Ron demanded.
Hacks!
Says the guy riding a palanquin. Ron sat back in his chair and clicked his tongue.
Walking was getting tiresome. All right, I'll drop one of the potions in exchange for 4 shots on that shotgun wand.
Jessica, are you okay with giving up a couple potions?
In exchange for the next 4 bosses, she said with a shrug.
4?
Jeb demanded.
There's the one you already owe me, she said, ticking them off with her fingers. The one I would have gotten anyway if we were splitting them 50-50, and the next one to actually make up for my lost share of the potions. The 4th one to see some kind of benefit from the deal. I think that's a pretty good offer, all things considered, since under normal circumstances, I would have gotten the 4th one as part of the split anyway.
You already traded the boss I owed you for all the loot that time around.
The loot sucked.
Not really my fault, is it? Jessica turned red and scowled at him, her freckles standing out on her cheeks. All right, I'll give you the next 4, but after that, it's me, then you. She wasn't wrong about number 2 and 4 belonging to her anyway. Jeb just put some pressure on her, so she felt like she'd gotten a good deal. Turns out humans are much better negotiators than fairies.
Fine.
He turned back to Ron. You got a deal. I'll meet you there with your stuff and see about getting you an army.
All right, Ron nodded. Did you still want to trade?
I figure I'll have more when I meet you there, Jeb said, waving as he and Jessica rose up into the air. A moment later, he had a thought and dipped down just as Ron was turning to leave. Do you care if your monster corpses are dismembered?
I can patch them back together, but it takes a lot less mist if they're relatively whole, Ron said.
Got it. Jeb turned and rejoined Jessica in the sky before the two of them headed off to the west, aiming at the volcano while Ron turned towards the northeast. 1 day, 8 hours remaining. You have gained a level. You have gained a level. Acting as the support was a whole different ballgame. Jeb had to make sure he didn't directly interact with the bosses as they came across them, instead doing crowd control from above for Jessica. The assassin flickered around them, making pinpoint turns at speeds that upset his stomach to watch, each turn accompanied by a spray of blood. At the top of the mountain was a giant goat with phenomenal horns, surrounded by hordes of smaller ones. Jessica had a little trouble when the big one's horns unfurled and began whipping around like tentacles while firing beams of energy, but she eventually found an opening to inflict a major wound on the creature's neck. After that, she danced around the creature a good 10 minutes until it ran out of steam, then ended its life with a quick slash. Beyond that, the Rocky Mountains turned flamey. All the scraggly brush that supported the hardy goats was burned away by the jets of fire erupting from the earth. Rock monsters reminiscent of the one he'd seen on Galaxy Quest seemed to be the creature of choice. Some of them were tougher, with an obsidian sheen and flame spurting out of their joints. And those ones were just as liable to toss a fireball as try and squish the puny humans to paste. Jessica switched weapons to a heavy mace and used it to crack apart the monster's stony exteriors, forcing them to bleed magma. The boss was a 10-foot monstrosity with heavy obsidian armor and powerful flame magic. Jeb thought he might have to step in several times, but Jessica was able to chip the creature's armor away by the skin of her teeth before driving Razorback into its weak core with a powerful thrust. The golem sank to the ground, collapsing onto its face. When she drew the weapon back, it was missing the last third of its blade, ending in a glowing white stub. Oh, man. Seeing the first treasure he'd ever found get destroyed sent a little pang of remorse through his heart, but he knew it couldn't have lasted forever. They spent most of their time scanning the mountain, searching the flamiest bits for fire lenses. After they found one in the largest geyser on the mountain, they decided it would be worth their time to check a lot of them. There was only a lens in one out of every six or so geysers, but being able to fly around the mountain, they were able to spot and identify several dozen flame geysers, netting them a healthy profit of flame lenses. All the lenses looked and felt like some variation of coal with a gentle flame rolling off of it. Jeb had to point out the pieces he suspected were lenses just so he didn't grab an actual piece of coal. In the end, their haul was such. 5 flame lenses ranging from large to small that looked like regular lumps of coal. 1 large geysering flame lens the size of a fist, with the appearance of compact bituminous coal. 1 small pure flame lens, about the size of a golf ball but lumpy and oblong, with the jagged glassy appearance of anthracite coal. 1 noxious flame lens, sized between the first two, with the appearance of lignite streaked with a pale impurity. Raw flame lens, various. The common flame lens is used in applications from cooking in homes to fireballs created by the most powerful wizards. The utility of creating fire on demand will always be highly sought after in every sector, making these lenses somewhat valuable despite their relatively common status among lenses. Raw geysering flame lens, large. Geysering flame lenses have an element of high pressure in their nature that causes the created flames to manifest more violently, at a higher energetic state than a normal flame lens might. This increase in volatility makes this a dangerous choice for home use, although they are highly sought after for military and industrial applications. Raw pure flame lens, small. Coveted by craftsmen across Pharaohs, the pure flame lens creates a beautiful blue flame that achieves the highest temperatures with the lowest amount of contaminants. Rarely found in nature, this lens is of tremendous value to those who work with metal for a living. Raw noxious flame lens, normal. Tinged by a metallic impurity, the noxious flame lens creates flames accompanied by toxic fumes that can disable or kill those exposed to it. Unsuitable for use in home or industry, noxious flame lenses occasionally see use in warfare. However, their use is a violation of the Sakaris Accord. Got some good goods, Jeb thought, eyeing the lenses. He was tempted to hide the pure flame lens from Rom when he came back, but he'd only agreed to give the man one, and Jeb didn't think the necromancer would choose the small lens over the more explosive large one, or even the noxious lens, given his undead creature's presumed immunity to toxins. If the necromancer did take the small high-quality one, that simply meant Jeb would walk away with the geyser lens, which would presumably make an excellent weapon, on the military scale, with a little sanding, shaping, and polishing to focus its beam on a single target rather than exploding in his hand. I don't think I have time to do that. Clearing off the volcanic range netted them 2 more potions, body and mist, along with a gold ring of body, a magical shield, a feather steel chain shirt, a weighted great axe, anklets of retraced steps, and a stein of bottomless beer. Jeb took the feather steel chain shirt and the ring, switching out his mist ring for it. Jessica picked out the anklets of retraced steps and weighted great axe. After a few hours of heated debate, they agreed to shared custody of the stein of bottomless beer. The shield was added to the barter pile along with a couple of Jeb's regular fire lenses. One of Jessica's accolades gave her +5 to mist, so once she got past the horrifying headache and alarming nosebleed, Jeb taught her how to draw in mist, with the intention of forming a core. He told her to imagine her most ideal magic, something she thought was incredibly cool, and build an image around it. "Why do I have to think it's cool?" she asked, still dabbing blood out of her clothes. "Because it works better if you think it's cool." "Maybe you know in your head," Jeb said, tapping his skull, "that creating plants is a handy, self-sustaining power, and a rational choice to take, but if you don't feel it, well, it's probably not going to work." "Is that how Ron got his power?" she asked. "Pretty much. Ron was probably one of those nerds that played nothing but necromancer on Diablo." Jessica spent a couple hours concentrating but failed to manifest a core. "It took me days, and I had way more mist than her, so I'm not surprised. But if she's able to manifest a core of any kind, even if they're little tricks, it'll add more options to her toolbox. Once she decided to take a break from trying to form a core, they packed up and headed northeast, sailing above the forest at 80 miles an hour. After the wind problem reared its head, Jeb had been able to solve it by extending a section of the field that supported him into something of a windshield, baffling the rush of air and making it possible to see where they were going at speeds faster than 60 miles per hour. It only took about an hour to fly the two of them from the top of the volcano to the other safe zone. Then they walked the rest of the way to the safe zone with the smoke of a dozen campfires rising above it. Didn't want to advertise what he could do just yet. One day, 3 hours remaining until safe zones expire. Chapter 10. Colorful Characters. The situation at the safe zone could only be described as tense. Some 30 men and women stood at the edge of the safe zone, forming a human wall that denied Ron access to what appeared to almost be a little cobbled-together village. Their weapons weren't drawn, but a few hands were heading that way.
We never arranged for any kind of deal with you. None of us feel safe around your walking corpses, so beat it.
Oh, you don't feel safe?
Ron asked, eyebrows rising in mock astonishment.
So you turn away an honest offer of help. Tell me, what other decisions are you making based on how you feel?
Honest offer? You want 2 stab potions in exchange for maybe helping us? The way I see it, you're just as likely to...
Wait up, Jeb cried, clomping forward on his cane as fast as he could, pushing through the army of shambling corpses before the guy could say the wrong thing and piss off the best source of disposable troops they had.
Who are you?
The man in front asked, glancing at Jeb.
I'm the one that offered to pay Ron to help the raid. I thought you could use the extra bodies.
Ron snorted. The man's eyes narrowed and he leveled a flaming spear at Jeb.
Now listen here.
Eddie? What's going on out there?
Came a reedy voice deeper into the safe zone.
Shit.
Eddie cursed under his breath.
Is there Ron?
The people clustered at the front hastily stood aside, revealing a toothless Cajun maybe into his 50s. The man's chin protruded, his lips drawn in from lack of teeth. He was thin, scrappy, and looked like the kind of guy with a million stories about squirrels.
Yeah, Freeman, it's Ron,
Eddie said, moving aside. The toothless Cajun was also apparently their strongest fighter and leader. Not exactly what Jeb was expecting.
It takes all types, I guess.
Ron, you here, Deb?
I am,
Ron said, glancing at Jeb.
This guy here bribed me to come back. The deal is any monster you bring me from now until the raid, I'll raise and send it along with you.
I knew you, good kid,
Freeman said, drawing Ron into a great big hug.
Even though those zombos are scary, he's just a boy listening to too much rock muzak. Trying to look cool. That's what I told him.
Jeb could barely understand what Freeman was saying.
Thanks, I guess,
Ron said, patting Freeman on the back.
Come in, come in,
Freeman said, motioning for Ron to enter the safe zone.
Just leave the zombos here, eh? And you too?
Freeman asked, approaching into their personal space and smiling disarmingly at him. Leader by charisma, I suppose, Jeb thought, soaking in the man's overwhelming energy.
Jessica and Jeb,
Jessica said, pointing between them.
We met David yesterday.
Ah, you do! Good to meet ya!
Freeman said, shaking their hands enthusiastically.
You and your boyfriend can sleep here tonight free if you like. Only got 1 day left on the lease after all. But if you want something else, you're gonna have to get it yourself or trade for it.
He's not... whatever.
Freeman chuckled and patted Jeb on the shoulder before heading back into the safe zone, the group of freshly battle-hardened warriors melting out of his way. Jeb shrugged and followed behind, ignoring the surrounding warriors as the camp spread out in front of them.
Damn.
It had only been 13 days, but the place almost looked like a little village, with 24 hastily constructed houses with stretched leather roofs to keep out the rain. There were about 6 campfires, and each of them had a thick knot of people sitting around it, sending the newcomers curious glances as they walked in. Of particular note was the man and woman who looked like they'd been ripped right off the front of a fitness magazine, sitting beside a huge pile of loot. Directly behind them was a huge sign written in charcoal that read, "Fuck my wife. One stat potion or best offer." Jeb felt his eyebrows climb his forehead. It made sense, logically, but the way they just went for it was astounding. Jessica followed his gaze and froze for an instant before she snorted.
"You think that's why David was so desperate to get his hands on the stat potion?"
"Why would anybody take that offer?" Jeb asked aloud. It was a stupid decision because a stat potion was forever. Directly aided a person's ability to survive was likely incredibly rare and valuable, while getting laid was much less vital. He asked, but he already knew the answer. Because people who think they're gonna die make stupid decisions to feel better. In the end, one thing was clear. These were the people to trade with. Jeb met up with Ron and handed off the potions and lens. As he'd predicted, Ron took the geysering lens. The necromancer had considered the poisonous one for a moment, until Jeb pointed out that while his zombies were immune, Ron himself still needed to breathe, and he couldn't actually see the poison. He threw in a normal lens as a goodwill gift. Once he was done with Ron, Jeb's foot, steered him towards the little stall run by the couple.
"Hey there, haven't seen you around before,"
the woman said with a brilliant smile. These people look like they belong on a toothpaste commercial.
"Hi, I'm Jeb," Jeb said, shaking the man's hand.
"Brett,"
the man said.
"Amanda,"
the woman gave her name, shaking his hand as well.
"You guys the healer slash soldier couple I heard about?" Jeb asked.
"That we are."
"I heard you two do gear repair and trading."
"We sure do."
Jeb was graced with another sparkling smile that nearly made him wince. Jeb mentally rolled up his sleeves. "Let's do this." After a short time perusing their wares and haggling, Jeb was able to get a few of the crafting ingredients he'd been looking for, including a file and saw for his lenses, tweezers and metal springs, along with a couple magic items he hadn't seen before. A mystical water boiler, clothing iron, double-sided tape, and wooden clothespins that floated, holding the object in question aloft without the need for a string. They weren't particularly sought after, so Jeb was able to trade some of the chaff from the volcano for them, chatting with the couple all the while. As it turned out, they were, in essence, mercantile slutty health nuts that had been tanning their cheeks at hedonism when the end of the world happened. They hadn't been in the same place at the time, but they'd both correctly assumed the other had taken the most extreme option. Jess swung by partway and had Razorback fixed. The soldier simply took the item and winced as his entire body was covered with what appeared to be a sunburn. Amanda simply reached out and tapped his shoulder. Jeb spotted a spark of silvery mist transfer between them, and the burn went away. Razorback in return regained the last foot of blade that had been melted away in the heart of an obsidian golem, looking as shiny and wicked as the day they'd looted it.
"How does it determine how much damage to do to you?"
Jeb asked, making air quotes.
"I don't know,"
Brett said, shaking his head.
"Just gotta kinda eyeball it. Size and how broken it is seems to contribute, and whether there are missing pieces, like that sword there. It scales inversely with my body. If I tried that when we first got started, I would have gotten more than just a little toasty."
"I see,"
Jeb said, rising to his feet. "Foot." Propping himself up with his cane, his swath of gear dangling off his makeshift belt.
"Would you like to buy a backpack?"
Amanda asked, glancing at him quizzically.
"Yes,"
Jeb admitted, the weight of his loot finally making it almost impossible to balance with a peg leg. Jeb got himself a nice big duffel bag that could fit all of his shit, slung it over his shoulder, and was halfway to an open space, mind buzzing with possibilities when he was approached by Freeman.
"Evening,"
Freeman said, nodding with a toothless grin as he approached.
"I hear about the bug and withdrawn. Were you planning on helping with that? I got to know whether I got to dust off the knuckles."
"Yeah, I was going to help," Jeb said, thinking of the noxious lens in his duffel bag. He'd already thought of a way it could help with no refining it whatsoever. Then Freeman did something unexpected. He made a high-pitched grunt somewhere between a frustrated groan and a squee. At the exact same time, a bubble of mist expanded outward from him, covering the distance between them in a fraction of a second. Jeb whipped his hand up and splayed his hand wide open, reflexively deploying his right-handed shield. The oncoming bubble of mist traveled straight through Jeb's barrier and engulfed him before rebounding, imploding back in on itself, sinking back into Freeman's body.
"Did you just ping me?"
Jeb asked, frowning.
"God damn, boy! You's loaded for bear!"
Freeman said, stumbling backward, eyeing Jeb's ragged appearance with a raised brow.
"I was gonna give you that speech about being careful, but maybe I should warn the other guys."
"What was that?" Jeb asked.
"My luck."
"Huh?"
"Mama always said better lucky than smart. I always been lucky. Just now I figured out how lucky I'd need to beat y'all in a stand-up fight. But that goddamn lucky was the answer, sure enough. Well, listen, you need help pulling in them bodies, you let Eddie or David know. Between you and me, they both could use some of that construction to do."
Freeman whispered conspiratorially.
"Will do," Jeb said, nodding.
Jeb found himself an empty spot on the fringe of the safe zone and dropped his duffel bag, using it as something to lean against as he pulled the noxious flame lens out of his pocket. "Time to get to work," he thought, drawing the mist in. Mystic trigger. He took one of the springs, straightened it out by hand, then bent it around the lens until it was securely bound. Then he tied a decent amount of mist to the wire, with the instructions to enter the lens the moment it became more than 99 feet away from him. The trigger after that was bound to the activation of the one before, and so on. Gradually, Jeb covered the entire spool of wire with linked activation conditions. It was tedious, mindless work that reminded him of braiding a rope. There was no arbitrary limit to the number of triggers Jeb could make, but he did need to stop after each one and draw in mist, keeping his star burning and expanding. This took only a minute or two, given the light workload. The only limit was time and patience. Patience Jeb had, but time was in short supply. After he'd linked 50 consecutive triggers to the lens, he stuffed it back in his pocket and pulled out the golf ball-sized lump of pure flame lens. Let's see. The flame is either created at the focal point or where it intersects with a solid. Either? Both? Jeb pulled out his new file and was about to get to work when he realized a test run would probably serve him better than just going gung-ho on his fanciest lens and possibly destroying its value or incinerating himself. Jeb pulled the worm lens out of his belt and sawed off the end of the stick, a chunk of rotten wood about the size of the pure flame lens. Cutting a lens for the first time was interesting. It looked like a rotten stick, but when he cut into it, it didn't have any kind of grain, and the resistance was uniform. The pieces that came off of the stick as he sawed were a fine dust, almost like he was cutting through chalk. The ease with which his saw bit through the lens was informative. He'd have to be careful not to let his lenses get dented if they were this soft, but that also meant they would be exceedingly easy to work with. That explains why they bury them in wands. They're protective casings. "Okay, let's try this," Jeb muttered, pulling out his file and going to town on the piece of wood, forming it into a rudimentary lens shape in a matter of minutes. Once it was close to being complete, he polished it up with a piece of leather and held it to the light to study. It wasn't machine perfect, but given the speed with which he created it, it was damn good. Jeb was actually fairly proud of himself. He'd never been particularly crafty, but the passive bonus from his class stacked on top of his nerves seemed to compensate for his lack of experience.
All right, let's try this out.
Jeb held his hand out and pointed the worm lens in front of him, drawing mist in, burning it, then siphoning it out through his palm, straight into the lens.
Let's start with just a little bit,
he thought, throttling his output way down. A worm the size of a goddamn boa constrictor appeared in midair and flopped onto the ground in front of him. It was at least 5 feet long and as big around as his wrist.
Holy shit!
Jeb scooted back from the worm, which was wriggling around in confusion. It was so big, Jeb could see its little mouth opening and closing as it searched for the safety of the earth. It still couldn't hurt anybody, but whoever heard of an earthworm with a mouth big enough to stick a finger in?
Okay, so the focus point is where the effect manifests.
Consistent with what he'd seen so far. Then why did the annihilation lens destroy everything in a sphere? Too much mist caused some kind of explosion? Maybe Jess saw a cone of destruction and attributed it to a sphere? Well, I'm sure I'll find out. Now, how much mist can a lens this size take?
Jeb had cut it about the same size as his pure flame lens for that express purpose. He didn't want to break the thing or make it blow up like the annihilation lens, so stress testing it was a priority.
Jeb got up and walked out into the forest, setting the lens on a tree branch before walking back about 50 feet, hopefully outside the range of the explosion, but still with decent visibility. Jeb threaded his mist across the distance and started making worms, doubling the output every time until the lens failed. Somewhere between creating a worm the size of a horse and the next step up, the lens cracked, sending a sensation back to him through his mist and to his ears. Instead of creating a worm the size of a city bus, the lens exploded and every surface within 30 feet of the lens was covered in writhing worms.
And that answers that, Jeb thought, paying close attention to the feel of the LSA, or last safe amount.
Jeb mentally made a note never to go over the LSA with his pure flame lens.
Hell, I probably shouldn't even get close. Still, I wonder how much fire a worm the size of a horse converts to. What's the standard unit of measurement?
There were so many unanswered questions and no time to answer them. Jeb glanced up at the sun slowly marching inexorably across the sky.
Not enough time at all.
He had to shelve the lens experimenting until after the assault on the world tortoise. For now, it was time to get Ron his corpses. Jeb hoped they beat the world tortoise tomorrow and everyone got to go home, but he planned for the worst. He needed safety devices similar to his own that he could use to rescue people on command.
Perhaps an ejector seat? I might be able to swing that.
There were certain people he wanted to survive, no matter how doomed this particular expedition was.
I know, I should be giving 100%. To paraphrase a wise man, planning for failure is worse than regular planning. Still, I'm going to do everything I can to ensure we have the best possible shot, and failing that, convince them not to do it. And failing that, save the useful ones.
Jeb wasn't young enough to give 100% to anything anymore. Brett and Amanda were irreplaceable, essential to long-term survival. Ron was a huge boon.
Jessica? Well, she fought good, but he honestly didn't know if she was any better or worse than the other fighters out there.
Still, she was a teammate, so he would do what he could to make sure she lived.
Now, the best way to accomplish these goals would be to weaken the tortoise's defenses while simultaneously raising our attack power.
With a thought, Jeb hoisted himself up, rising into the sky until he located the world tortoise on the horizon, meandering around the edge of the forest. Jeb raised himself up higher. He could make a mad rush for the creature and try lobbing the noxious stone onto it from the side, fending off thousands of flying monsters in a heroic, suicidal mad dash. But why? Jeb flew up and up until the world tortoise looked like a regular tortoise, and the air started getting thin. Then he flew above the creature, hovering directly over it, albeit a couple thousand feet up. Jeb took his bag full of aerial bombs and turned it inside out, sending them tumbling towards the creature's shell. He then took the wire-wrapped noxious flame lens out of his pocket and dropped it. From above. It's coming down from above. Jeb's heart rate spiked, and he was forced to stop and take deep breaths as the dozen rocks and one fist-sized nugget of coal tumbled away from him. He was broken out of his intrusive thoughts when the lens went boom. The instant the lens got 99 feet away from him, the first trigger activated. A mist began steadily feeding into it, causing it to burst into flames. Huge gouts of pinkish flame and green-tinted smoke began pouring out of it as it fell, the fire reaching nearly 30 feet in every direction and the poisonous smoke going much farther. Damn, Jeb thought, covering his mouth and flying away from the smoke, not eager to breathe the stuff rising up from beneath. Jeb flew to the side and down, aiming to put some serious distance between himself and the weapon currently belching out fire and smoke. The aerial bombs hit the tortoise's shell with concussive blasts, sending out shockwaves and knocking down large swaths of the trees covering the tortoise's shell. Jeb even thought he might have seen a piece of shell fly up, but he couldn't tell for sure. The parasites flew out of their little hidey holes, looking like undersea worms burrowed in coral. They swam into the air, absolutely furious. Behind them were giant panthers that ran on the air, insects the size of buses, things that almost looked like dragons, as well as dozens of other creatures that ran the gamut from simply gigantified to downright bizarre. They crowded the air, darkening the sky around the tortoise like a cloud. And there were still thousands of landbound critters crawling all over the tortoise's back, looking for something to fight. A moment later, the burning stone landed on the tortoise's back, lighting the forest around it on fire with its constant blaze and poisoning the creatures as they swirled around in alarm. They swiveled their heads, seemingly looking for the cause of their current predicament. "Hey, you sons of bitches!" Jeb shouted at the top of his lungs, waving his hands, flying his whole body in a stomach-churning loop. "Yeah, you! Come and get me, assholes!" That got a reaction. "Oh, crap, they're fast!" Jeb turned and ran, well, flew, as fast as he could, aiming for the safe zone, a cloud of death following after him. It was a short but tense race between him and the flying defenders, and if they weren't poisoned, they probably would have caught him. "You have gained a level! You have gained a level! You are now level 32! Jeb glanced over his shoulder and saw the fire on top of the enormous tortoise spreading, a thick fog of poisonous smoke spreading in every direction. He also saw a pair of mandibles from a horse-sized dragonfly rapidly gaining on him. "Pip one," he said, pointing over his shoulder. The creature effortlessly dodged the invisible bullet, huge eyes glinting in the sun with what Jeb could swear was amusement. Dragonflies were the apex predator of the dogfighting world. Most of their brain was literally devoted to it, and trying to alter his course wasn't going to do anything. He was right on top of the safe zone, about to get eaten by a bug monster. So Jeb did the only sensible thing. He dropped his flight entirely. Concentration free, Jeb whipped his hand around and caught the creature in a magical fist, crushing its wings against its body an instant before it cut him in half. He lashed out with his good foot as the creature approached, knocking it up and sending himself tumbling downward, earth and sky spinning around him at ridiculous speeds. Jeb hit the ground head first, a half ton of earth trying to ram itself into every orifice on his face, legs dangling over him like one of those yoga chicks. You know the ones. Jeb's peg leg fell off, bonking him on the skull before it rolled a couple of feet away.
"Oh!"
Jeb's spine creaked dangerously as he straightened it before he pulled himself out of the man-sized divot in the clearing. Jeb hauled himself to his knees, rubbing his back as the sun was gradually choked off by the enormous swarm of high-level monsters surrounding the safe zone, buzzing, flapping, growling, and generally making a din. When he looked in front of himself, he saw Eddie staring at him, mouth gaping. The warrior had his hand elbow deep in Jeb's duffel bag, and a good portion of the contents were strewn around the packed earth of the safe zone. What am I looking at exactly? Jeb asked. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 32, body 16, mist 58 plus 2, nerve 21 plus 3, abilities, Mystic Trigger, 2 step points remaining. Finger gun clips, ack, 10, check, pip, 10, check, kip, 10, check. Alpha Strike, skull and crossbones, full auto, juggernaut, check, mark of Cain, check, Cain auto, 4, BP check, HR check, BD check, OD check, Cain manual, 2, just getting started, check, alt blinks, check, shield, 4, check, armor, head, check, torso, check, legs, check, upper arms, check, lower arms, check, projectile reflection, 50, check, safety phrases, restraints, 3W, check, scarabs, check, Plitzkin, check, no homo, check, room full of Charlie's skull and crossbones grenades go boom, nut, check, rock, check, knife, check, authorized magical girl transformation, skull and crossbones, aerial bomb, 10, check. Chapter 11. Generic Villains. There was pandemonium in the camp as people snatched up weapons, leaping to their feet and preparing to defend themselves. But Jeb only had eyes for his bag and the douche with his hands in it. Jeb cleared his throat.
"What did you do?"
Eddie shouted, dropping Jeb's bag and pointing at him, deliberately raising his voice so everyone could hear.
"This guy brought the monsters to the safe zone. How could you do that?"
"Nice red herring." Jeb raised a brow, grabbed his peg leg and blew the dirt out of it before putting it back on his stump and climbing to his feet. Foot. A slowly growing knot of people were gathering around him, following Eddie's lead.
"What the hell? Do you have any idea?"
"Ladies and gentlemen," Jeb said, picking up his duffel and pulling the penetrator out of it, along with its tattered spearhead cousin. "Let's put a pin in this conversation until the buffet of free levels is gone. What do you say?" He imbued the two blades with mist and sent them streaking up into the dense cloud of baddies swarming around the invisible dome. Jeb pulled up a seat next to a fire and grabbed someone's uncooked monster meat on a stick, warming his foot next to the rack lining the fire pit while he watched the skies. If it weren't for the harsh screams of dying monsters and the shouting of the locals, it would have been a nice, relaxing camp-slash-barbecue. Eddie and others watched in awe as Jeb's blades plunged through creature after creature around the top of the dome, creating a hail of dead bodies falling to the earth. Thankfully, no one remaining was weak enough to be seriously injured by something big falling on them. Except maybe him and Ron. It didn't take more than a couple seconds for the quicker-witted members of the community to see the obvious benefit of having a semi-permeable force field in their favor, as anybody with a bow, spear, or particularly long sword began killing the monsters from the safety of the safe zone. "You have gained a level. You are now level 33. In about half an hour, the swarm of monsters was substantially reduced and limped back to the world tortoise, their fury spent. Littering the ground in and around the safe zone were thousands of bodies of monsters of every description. Ron was busily sorting through them, resurrecting the most powerful ones he could find that were in good condition. A few of them could still fly, even.
"What the hell were you thinking?"
Eddie said, grabbing Jeb's shirt and hauling him out of his seat.
"What if they had trapped us in here? What if they could have attacked through the wall?"
"I was thinking," Jeb said, prying the man's fingers off his shirt, "that if you couldn't beat those monsters with a safe zone protecting you, you definitely couldn't beat them out in the open. It would be better to know that now than to rush into death. Those are the monsters that defend the world tortoise," Jeb shouted, raising his voice and gathering even more attention. "It wasn't all of them, either. I wanted you all to get a taste of what you're up against." "Who here got a level from this?" Jeb asked. Hands started going up, and they didn't stop.
"You put us in danger!"
"Everyone here is going to be in danger tomorrow. I single-handedly gave every person here the opportunity to level and grow more powerful, while simultaneously weakening the tortoise's defenses. And got us 1,000 meat shields in the process, Jeb said, motioning to Ron. What did you do in that time except dig through my bag looking for something to steal? The problem with suddenly defeating stupid with words was that they had a tendency to take it poorly. Case in point. Eddie punched him in the face. The fist came faster than Jeb could react, smashing into his nose with the force of a goddamn truck. The femtosecond the bones in Jeb's nose began to crack, the armor mystic trigger on his head activated, seizing everything in the vicinity of his head and flinging it away. In this case, Eddie's fist, and by extension, Eddie. Eddie flew backwards like an arrow, dragged through the air by his right arm, flopping like a fish on a hook until he violently impacted a large tree on the edge of the safe zone. Jeb staggered backward, blinking tears out of his eyes. Getting punched in the nose makes your eyes water, whether you're tough or not. Ask a boxer.
Don't do that again,
Jeb said, wiping the blood off of his nose and re-upping the armor trigger on his head. If he didn't have it, Eddie would have punched him into death or unconsciousness and won the argument by lack of opposition. I can see why Ron didn't want to stick around for the politics. Here, Amanda said, jostling her way through the crowd and touching the bridge of his nose. It felt icy cold for an instant, like he'd snorted a crushed-up Altoid. Then it faded along with the pain.
That was pretty fucking cool, Brett said. Eddie likes to play King of the Castle whenever Freeman isn't watching, and he tries his damnedest to make life miserable for anyone who stands up to him. A few have disappeared and we don't know if they just left or...
The soldier shrugged.
Most people are too afraid to do anything.
Everyone saw him going through your stuff, but he said you died and nobody was brave enough to argue. Sorry.
The healer said, her eyes down.
Died? I was gone for an hour.
Jeb rolled his eyes. Whatever. Jeb caught some 6 or 7 guys giving him the stink eye as they sauntered away. Those Eddie's constituents?
Yeah, they're the might-makes-right mentality fuckwads that crawl out of the goddamn woodwork whenever something terrible happens,
Brett said, shaking his head. And the only way to prove them wrong is by being stronger than them, Jeb said with a sigh.
Yeah, it's a real fucking catch-22. You're not really a beggar, are you?
Came a voice from Jeb's left. David was approaching, hand resting on the palm of his sword.
Apologies, but the first people I met tried to rob me. Didn't know if you meant to do the same. No harm, no foul,
David said, holding up a placating hand.
As for my class, telekinetic combatant, I can move shit with my mind.
Jeb felt a little guilty for lying to the same guy twice, but he wanted to keep his cards close to the vest. If people knew he could design traps, they would figure out a way to circumvent them. Besides, no one would be able to tell the difference between the two on casual examination, not without bringing in another telekinetic combatant to compare.
Yeah, I saw that,
David said, shaking his head.
I guess I should have assumed anyone who was still alive was dangerous.
Probably a good call.
Hey, we're putting some of the tastier monsters over a spit at our fire. We'd love to have you over,
David said, thumbing over his shoulder where his 15 men and women were carving off hunks of meat and getting them ready to grill.
Your friend, Jessica is welcome too, of course.
Give me a minute to sort my stuff out and I'll be right there, Jeb said with a nod.
Cool.
David patted him on the shoulder and left.
What's David's group like?
Jeb asked, turning back to the couple.
They're more moderate, and that appeals to more people. But their individual levels lag behind Eddie's group. They're only able to keep from getting absorbed because they have more numbers,
Amanda said.
What about you two?
Jeb asked. Which group do you put yourself in?
Independent contractors,
Brett said, crossing his arms.
One of Eddie's goons tried to extort Amanda for sex, so she broke the guy's arm.
Jeb's eyebrows rose.
I've drank stamp potions equivalent to someone who's cleared 16 areas,
the healer said with a shrug.
I don't even have a class yet, but these boys know to think twice before they try anything. 16 times 3 equals 48 stat points.
Even split up and assigned randomly, that put her lowest stat likely in the 20s. Jeb knew exactly how she'd gotten that many potions, but he couldn't fault them for it. It was a damn good survival strategy. Also, the information that she was a mist user and her ability to heal wasn't class-related was good to know.
Damn, Jeb said, shaking his head. Well, if you two find yourselves looking for a group to join, I could use a hand.
No offense, but you just got here,
Amanda said apologetically.
That makes sense.
None taken, Jeb said. Just wanted to put that out there.
Politics aside, hopefully by tomorrow this whole tutorial business will be behind us, Brett said.
Are you both taking part in the raid tomorrow? Jeb asked. The two of them nodded.
Almost everyone is.
Almost?
Casey is pregnant,
Amanda said, pointing to a woman with short black hair sitting by the fire with a bulging belly.
She says she chose the impossible difficulty tossing in her sleep, but who knows?
She shrugged. Jeb could make out a faint scar on the young woman's wrist. Assisted suicide, perhaps? Some people might not have the guts to kill themselves outright, but enough to choose a course of action that would lead to their death. Jeb was familiar with self-destructive behavior. Anyone else?
A few. Mostly people with injuries I can't heal.
Amanda looked at his foot apologetically.
I can't grow back limbs.
Yet, Jeb said. You've only been able to use mist for what, a week? And you don't even have a class yet. I would not be surprised if you find a way to do just that. Amanda seemed to brighten a bit at that. I gotta hold on to this person, Jeb thought to himself. Aside from the immediate benefit of having a healer, it would be nice to hold out hope for his foot. Jeb said farewell to the two of them and headed for the fire where David's group was, meeting many of the same people he'd seen standing behind the quick blade the first time, rubbing elbows and chatting them up about their survival strategies, how they came to be here, and so on. He glanced up and spotted Eddie, giving him a sour look every once in a while, but the black-haired man didn't give him any further trouble. After the meal was over, David pitched the idea of Jeb joining his group, and Jeb politely declined, leaving things on, hopefully, good terms with them before heading back to the outskirts of the camp, where his little fire pit sat, empty and full of ash. Jeb sat down and set his duffel bag next to him, body still warm from the meal and company. Time to make those safety belts, he thought, mulling over his options. He wanted to make some kind of ejector seat for people he wanted to keep, but the logistics of that was mind-boggling. He considered trying to make a self-contained bauble with some kind of fluid and bobber inside so it could always tell which direction was up, but after it shot people into the sky, he couldn't think of a way to get it to bring people back to the safe zone. If the ejection seat primary has triggered and the mist packet is closer than any of the others to the safe zone, then it triggers, drawing them in that direction. I might be able to work with this, assuming it can tell the distance to the safe zone. Or perhaps me? Yeah, this could work. Jeb had zero experience with programming, but he imagined it might be a bit like this, at least for the simpler things. He spent the rest of the night perfecting his ejector seats, only managing to make four before he had to lie down and sleep. Before bed, he dropped his three new stat points into mist. He barely felt the headache. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 33, body 16, mist 61 plus 2, nerve 21 plus 3. Abilities, Mystic Trigger. 14 hours remaining until safe zones expire. Jeb woke up refreshed, the smell of camp smoke bringing back boyhood memories. I honestly thought someone was going to try and kill me in my sleep. Jeb grabbed his cane and pushed himself up, blinking the sand out of his eyes as he took in the bustle of activity. He hadn't noticed last night, but those last 3 points that brought him up to 60 mist had changed something. Everyone seemed to be radiating an aura of some kind. It varied from person to person, but most of them looked nervous.
Men and women were strapping armor on, making sure their weapons were sharp, checking and rechecking their sheaths were fixed on straight. It was the jitters before a battle. Everyone's getting ready for the big date. I just want to survive it. Jeb pulled out his list of traps, made sure they were all topped off, then went around affixing ejector seats to his four MVPs, Amanda, Brett, Ron, and Jessica. Once that was done, it wasn't long before they were underway, forming a loose line of people marching through the wilderness toward the meandering tortoise. They were broken up into small knots of people. Freeman and his people at the front, followed by David and his people, with Eddie's group trailing behind. In the middle, ones and twos like Jeb and Jessica, Brad and Amanda, walked along by themselves. Flanking everyone on either side of the group were huge zombified beasts of every description, acting as a buffer. They would definitely help with finishing the plan safely. The plan was this. Sneak onto the creature's tail, the only thing that wasn't stomping up and down like crazy. Sneak into the shell, find the thing's weak spot, and murder it. Simple, right? Except not at all, Jeb thought, squinting as he gazed up at the mountainous creature moving across the horizon. The forest on top of its shell showed no sign of the fire he'd inflicted on it the day before. Jeb frowned, squinting as he scanned the very top center of the shell. There's got to be a little scorch mark at the middle where the lens fell, at least.
Incoming!
Freeman shouted, and Jeb noticed the stream of monsters beginning to pour out of the shell. They weren't even close to the tortoise. Damn, he thought, bringing his blades up and sending them into the sky. All the zombies tightened up their lines to protect the humans as effectively as possible. Then the fight was on. The swarm of monsters crashed over the group like a storm, relentless and unceasing. They left a wake of bodies behind them as they pushed forward, fighting for every inch of ground. It was a much different thing fighting these creatures on a level playing field, rather than shooting through the safe zone's walls. The zombies helped, sure, but it wasn't nearly the same. The biggest advantage that humans had was their power-to-size ratio. These monsters couldn't quite jam themselves in close enough to truly swarm the defenders. Instead, attacking 12 or so at a time while the humans took turns fighting off the creatures. Jeb, for his part, put his back to a lumbering zombie the size of an elephant and whipped his knives through the air, picking off the monsters here and there that seemed to hold an advantage. It was a chaotic mess, but everyone eventually fell into a rhythm, hacking away at baddies with mechanical efficiency. Even Amanda took out a few of the ones that got too close to her as she ran back and forth from the middle of the pack like a midfielder, reattaching freshly severed limbs and closing flesh ripped open by claws before sprinting back to the middle, as close as possible to the unknown next injury, and as far from danger as possible. Jessica was... The assassin was leaping from monster to monster in midair, using them as footing in between gouts of blood as she did some anime-level shit.
Jeb!
Ron shouted over the roar of combat, dragging his attention away from Jessica's aerial gymnastics.
What? Something fucky's going on!
Ron shouted.
You'll have to be more specific!
It had been a long 2 weeks. Ron motioned to some of his nearby zombies, dragging corpses toward them. The corpses were two white tigers with clouds around their feet that somehow allowed them to run on the air. In death, the clouds had dispersed.
What am I supposed to be looking at? Jeb asked. The face!
It only took a moment for Jeb to spot it. The human brain is good with faces. Both the tigers had identical scars across their left eye. Matter of fact, the tigers' faces looked fairly identical, too.
Twins? With identical scars?
Jeb asked, hoping that was the answer. Ron shook his head and pointed to one of his zombies. It was a giant white tiger with a scar over its left eye.
Oh, damn it.
2 was a coincidence. 3 was a pattern. These weren't identical twins with matching scars. These were created monsters, stamped off of an assembly line. The implications were frightening. The most important of which was that the swarm wasn't going to end anytime soon. if ever.
I gotta tell Freeman.
Ron nodded, kneeling down to touch the two corpses. A highly concentrated spark of purple energy leapt between his fingertip and the corpses, and they opened their eyes. The clouds forming around their feet as they jumped off the ground and began fighting the creatures above them. Jeb swam through the thick haze of the battlefield, aiming for the front of the line where Freeman was leading the march toward the tortoise. Freeman's fighting style was effective. The old Cajun wore some kind of cestus, spiky gloves on his hands, and faced through creatures' attacks to deliver bone-splintering strikes on their noses. It seemed no matter what the man was fighting, he'd punch it right in the snoot. Matter of fact, Jeb didn't see the old man attack anything anywhere but the face. More often than not, it worked, too. So he's got phasing as a class skill, and luck as a missed ability. I can see how that would be hard to compete with. As Jeb thought that, one of the charging monsters tripped over its allies, toppling to the ground in front of Freeman. The 10-foot-tall creature's snoot in ideal booping distance. Freeman punched the creature's nose so hard it crumpled like a fruit roll-up. Or perhaps like the way a car wraps around an oak tree after hitting it at 120. Another one tried to use the old man's distraction to claw him from behind, and the claw simply slid through the Cajun's back to no effect. Jeb approached, clomping past Freeman's allies as the Cajun took out the offending creature, its eyeball popping out of its skull.
Freeman!
Jeb shouted, getting the old man's attention.
Jeb! What you doing here?
The monsters are copies, Jeb said. They're coming off an assembly line. They're not going to slow down or end.
Freeman frowned, then glanced back at the people fighting behind him, panting, sweat dripping from their faces as they staved off the onslaught of monsters. He looked back to the tortoise that was looming ever larger over them.
Don't matter, Freeman said, shaking his head. Don't change what we gotta do.
You really think everyone's gonna last that long?
Jeb demanded.
Nose tells me we don't finish this today. We don't finish at all,
he said, tapping his nose. Where does it get that? Jeb thought to himself. Looking more closely, he spotted mist rolling off the man's body like heat from a furnace. Is he burning through his reserves to get this done? Jeb looked at their situation with a critical eye. Attrition was a bitch, but the zombies were doing their part, giving people a chance to rest or heal, keeping the enemies from attacking more than a few at a time.
We just might have enough to get there, but we won't have enough for the trip back.
If they won, Jeb expected to be teleported out of the tutorial, but otherwise they would be slaughtered. Was it worth a shot? Probably. Jeb was tempted to believe it. As long as Ron can keep up with demand, we might actually be able to make it. Sucker must be leveling like crazy. Some god with a twisted sense of humor must have been listening to Jeb's thoughts, because it was at that exact moment that the horde of zombies surrounding them went feral and started attacking humans indiscriminately. Jeb felt a pinch on his back as something broke the skin, and he turned to see the zombie bear he trusted his back to being flung away by its paw. In its place were dozens more undead of every shape and size, charging mindlessly. What the hell? What the hell?
You're gonna want to check on that,
Freeman shouted, crushing a charging monster's skull before punching a zombie trying to bite him in its face, exploding the head like a watermelon. Jeb dropped his knives and picked himself up, deftly weaving through the chaos, with the intention of posing a sternly worded WTF, possibly including murder. Jeb gained a little too much altitude trying to navigate the battle, and a flying creature swooped down on top of him from behind, claws clamping down on his body, catching both his leg armor and skull armor triggers, sending it flying violently away but leaving a gouge on his torso. It wasn't serious enough to trigger the traps he'd left on the cane, but it burned like fire across his ribs.
Damn,
Jeb thought, lowering his altitude as he approached Ron's last known location, dropping to the ground and catching himself on his cane. There was nothing there but a splotch of blood on the ground. Then again, there was blood everywhere, so Jeb didn't have any solid evidence, but something inside him told him something bad had happened to Ron. The humans were being pushed hard now, forced to close ranks into a tight knot of survivors to fend off both the undead and the tortoise's guardians. If Ron was still alive, he was probably being flung by Jeb's ejector seat back towards the safe zone. Do they attack when he's out of range of them? Or is it because he's dead? Or something else? He didn't have much more time to think about it as a flicker of motion to his left caught his attention. He turned to see one of Eddie's archers stumbling backwards, an arrow embedded in his shoulder. He tried to shoot Jeb, and Jeb's projectile traps had caught the arrow and sent it back. In a fraction of a second, it became clear what had happened. Eddie's crew had attacked Ron when Jeb was no longer close enough to protect him. They'd either knocked the ginger kid out or wounded him grievously, triggering Jeb's ejector seat. That was why Ron was nowhere to be seen, and it was why his zombies were acting up. Son of a bitch, Jeb muttered, glancing at the knot of men breaking away from the back of the group, fighting their way toward the safe zone and abandoning the rest of them in the process. They had obviously preemptively killed the undead around them and were making steady progress away from the main force. I gotta get Freeman to sound a retreat. This is going tits up faster than a coked-up squirrel. Jeb turned to get the old man's attention, but was brought to a halt when he felt white-hot pain sear through his chest, paralyzing his back and lungs, allowing him nothing more than a soft gasp of pain as his assailant savagely twisted the blade through his liver before yanking it out. Jeb staggered forward, but he couldn't keep his balance with one foot, and he toppled to the ground, his blood mixing into the mud underneath him. Jeb heard someone spit and felt a little wet hit the back of his skull before Eddie stepped over him. You son of a bitch, Jeb thought, trying and failing to get his noodly arms under